always do.
Follow the money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Thanks for watching, as always, on YouTube TV, listening on Sirius XM channel 158, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, or any of our affiliates across the country. Busy hour coming up. Andy Molitor on the program coming up in 15 minutes. One half of the Deep Dive podcast, along with Drew Dinsick. We'll talk some NFL futures with him at that point. Wes Reynolds on the show. Look at the rest of the golf weekend that we have. And his Hoosiers, I think, had a really good week on the field this week. We'll explain that. Doug Kazarian on the program later on. And Christopher Smith, who covers the Red Sox. So as for the WNBA games that we have tonight, Paulie, the Golden State Valkyries are playing at the Dallas Wings. And Dallas, they're holding tight here as a 1 or 1.5 point favorite in the game. The total, look at this now. This is an atypical WNBA game over the past week plus. The total's at 161.5. It's that low on the screen here at circa 163.5. Tyler Shoemaker, VSiN.com, says the Wings have been 2.5 points worse than their season average over the last three games. Golden State has been slightly above theirs. They won the only prior matchup this year, 91-80. That was in Golden State. I took the Valkyries today at +1.5 in this game.
Good. Concur. Yeah. I think it's the wrong team's favorite.
I think at worst, even in Dallas, for whatever home court might be worth here in this sport, it has to be a pick 'em at worst. And I would probably lean with you that they should be a slight favorite here.
And you might hate me. I like all three games over tonight.
Well, why would I hate you?
Well, I just think basketball because the 5-1 under run now, but I just think this will because Golden State has been scoring the last couple of games and played four straight overs, and Dallas doesn't play any defense. So I think this can be a high-scoring game. We know Atlanta gets up and goes, and they can score, and that's 170, and you know what to do with the Mercury. They're playing an awful Sun team, and they've been great offensively since they acquired Plum, and they have a lot of ammunition and firepower as well, and they're also very good with the pace. So I think we can see some high-scoring games here tonight.
Yeah, in that game, Phoenix playing on the road against Connecticut, the first number that I saw for the total was 171.5, bumped up to 175, and now it's around 173.5. That's the game that I like to go over because I think this Phoenix style is going to translate for the rest of the year, and they're going to play. And by the way, look at the totals tonight compared to what they have been the last two nights here. Every game, basically, the last couple of nights, well, the Caesars again posted the Fever and the Aces on an Oprah at 196. That game, you want to talk about betting alt-unders like last night in that game and some others as well. Overtime wasn't even close enough for it as well. Overtime couldn't even get the second half total over.
Yeah, how about that?
So it was that high. And the night before, same thing kind of happened with 3-1 to the under there.
Good point. I'm glad you mentioned that. That's another thing you can do at halftime. They are still putting up ridiculously high totals.
Oh, super high.
30, 95s.
Yeah.
The Chicago game, the high total in the 90s. Of the Fever game that wasn't even close.
Was it 96.5, 97.5 last night?
Yeah, so still at halftime, they're going to put up a lot of high totals for the second half as well, if you can jump in or you want to.
Okay.
And we got maybe a couple gals are out for Washington. They've covered 6 in a row, and they're off the biggest comeback in franchise history going back since 2017. They were down 20 against Dallas. Atlanta opened 3. They're up to 5.5 because of the injuries and 170.5. They're playing the records there in terms of the wins, but it's been, you know, that miracle win on the atrocious call when they were down 5 with like 20 seconds. And there was another comeback they had with the other team handed them the game. So I don't think they're as good as their record says. And when they're matched up against some of the better teams, they're going to lose. But here, this is tough because we have to see who's playing for Washington, but also Washington's playing good ball. Going to be a playoff team that they've covered 6 in a row, but I think it's high scoring.
Yeah, what does the market know here? Because I was going back and forth with Mike Palm on this earlier today. He could not understand. He said something's fishy here. And right now on the screen, it looks like Atlanta is consensus a 5.5 point favorite, opener 3.5 again. And it did touch 6.5 for a long time. And then it comes out that the guards are questionable there for Washington. But not only Mike Palm, again, Tyler Shoemaker here at the network, he did not make it close to this at all, the number. But then you wipe out two players potentially, and that's going to change things a little bit as well. And so if they do play, though, you'll see this correct to where it probably should be then. And that this total is basically the same as the opener right now. at 170.5.
Yeah, these first two games, if you want to check them out, check out the pace too early on. Because I think if the pace is what we wanted at, then you can get involved in play as well. I think we missed one last night with Portland. And they got there. Why are they 1.5 tomorrow against Seattle? Bad team. What am I missing here?
I don't know.
Why
did we miss one last night?
They blew them out. Toronto's terrible. They're not playing good ball. Okay. In Portland, that was an easy win, what they did. And, tough place to play as well. What was that score? 97-83. They took them out, no problem.
Well, how about the schedule for the Aces now? Mm-hmm. After playing at Indiana last night, they play the Lynx tomorrow on the road. And right now, Minnesota's a 5.5-point favorite in that game. Total is 186.5. Then on Sunday, they play at the Liberty.
So that's the schedule spot?
But I will say this now, because you would think that initially you're going to be like, okay, I'm going to circle the Liberty game. It's a horrible spot for them. We'll see. Because this team has been the best team, bar none, in this sport after a loss.
Yeah.
So if they get beat at Minnesota, I know it's a back-to-back, I'd be more inclined to bet the Aces in that spot, even though they're a 5.5-point dog on Saturday.
This is the Jeff Sherman angle. Take the Lynx tomorrow after that embarrassing performance.
Sure. But look ahead spot last night?
Perhaps, yes. So it shouldn't happen.
How about this total on the board tomorrow? Fever at the Sky.
This is everything you want.
194.5.
This could be 210. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The Chicago's high-paced, fast-paced, high-scoring. They've been a different team since Carrington came back. Again, they don't know how to win yet. They've been so bad in these close games. They've only won one close game the whole year. Numerous 1-point and 2-point losses. Probably fever and over here. They should get what they want offensively. But this one, the total's too low. And this could be a track meet too. At 12:30 Pacific. Yeah.
I will tell you that I'm at this point now. I know they blew the game last night. The Fever did.
How does that happen?
They should have won the game.
Give up a 22-0 run?
That can't. You get a layup, somebody.
Got too much.
Make a 15.
Too many
footer.
Gals can score.
No, they have too much offensive firepower, obviously.
Yes.
I am kind of drooling for those two teams to play in the playoffs.
Because, you think it's a bad matchup?
I think the regular season here translates to the postseason because these games have been, again, last night, they fell apart. They had a huge lead. They should have won the game, right. Yada, yada, yada.
You can't score 9 points in a quarter.
No, that's...
At home, come on.
They blew them out the previous two games.
Yeah.
So this might be a matchup deal here for the Aces that I could buy because the Aces will be favored in that matchup as well. They have a higher power rating than the Fever do. So they'll be favored, and it won't be a huge plus price in Indiana, but might be something there. And I don't know who a matchup problem is going to be. It's funny how it works, right? Styles make fights. The only team maybe in the league that could beat Minnesota in a series would be the Aces. But if the Aces have to play the Fever, like to get to the Lynx, I don't know if they get by them.
Could you label her a disappointment? Based on how the turnovers and how they...
Clark?
Yes. Like the numbers are there.
Bit.
The assists are there, but also the turnovers are there, and sometimes the offensive game's off and not being able to knock down threes consistently in the road games. I would still call her a work in progress.
Yes.
I mean, that's just... how you miss... She was 1 of 6 from 3 the other night. How you miss 2 free throws at the end when you can put the game away, and then you had another big turnover in overtime.
I think we're also expecting the Michael Jordan of women's basketball.
Yeah, she had huge expectations.
And she's had an unfair shake. I mean, the entire league's against her.
That is true, and she's had injury.
Yeah. But, yes. I mean, does that mean, is that the reason why she's missing open threes? No. Hit your shots. Don't miss those free throws last night. Win the game.
Yeah.
So, not great.
We can't even count last year. She only played 13 games.
No.
But, again, that's... Your third year and 24 years old. So see if they can do something in the playoffs coming up when there's a lot of support for them. But the other thing is you got to defend. And I just don't trust their defense or see enough if they can make a postseason run based on what we watch defensively.
What if last night's Hall of Fame game was a prelude to the regular season? We are in for a doozy of a year.
I was shocked how bad the defense was. The simple stuff there, just dumping the ball off, the stuff over the middle again, the blown coverage on third and long when Arizona was backed up. Stuff like that can't happen.
I remember the year after the Packers won the Super Bowl, and they opened up the season that year against the Saints, and it was like 42-34, and Rodgers and Brees were unbelievable, and they had adjusted the rules to make it easier for quarterbacks in the passing game. And I was like, I wonder if this is the – and that was the year. It just – all hell broke loose in a good way with the passing games and how dramatic the games were. But that, you get that every single year. But, like, high scoring, it's one game. I don't want to overreact. I'm not doing that. But I'm just saying, like, this year is going to be phenomenal if we get something like that. Because usually we're coming on here talking about, oh, that was another dud Hall of Fame game, stink bomb central.
Well, I did think – didn't we see a lot of overs in week one of the preseason last year?
Don't recall.
What happened? Because there's a lot of 39s and 38s.
Oh, I remember the totals went up for sure.
Yeah. For all the games coming out with week one next week. The wait's over. College football betting guides here. Sign up for VSiN Pro today. Instant access to the guide. Previews of all 138 teams. Preseason top 50. Humans and Paul Stone top 10. Proven betting systems. Best bets from everyone. Paul Stone's top 15 quarterback list. And you also get the NFL betting guide, the Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide. Every best bet, every host, every guest, the betting splits, AI-powered prop projections, and the 24/7 video on the Watch app. Start today, just $9.99, or get the full year and save 50% with the VSiN Pro annual subscription. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe now. VSiN.com/subscribe.
Talk some NFL futures coming up next. This is Follow the Money on VSiN, the sports betting network. Andy Molitor is in town for Bet Bash. He's one half of the Deep Dive podcast, along with Drew Dinsick. Very good on this sport. We'll talk to him about it coming up, get some best bets for the upcoming season next. Welcome back. We're live in Vegas. Circa Resort and Casino is the spot. Mitch and Pauly here on a Friday, and this could be a lot of fun. Andy Molitor does a great job with the Deep Dive podcast, along with Drew Dinsick, and he joins us here in studio in town for Bet Bash. Probably signing up for some contests as well, is my guess. Good to see you, man. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. I'll actually be back 3 weeks for sign-up weekend, too.
That's what you're going to do.
Yeah,
huh?
So we'll be up here for the Radio Row stuff for the sign-up weekend as well.
You were telling me a story. They kind of coincided a couple of years ago when you eventually had to stay in Las Vegas for like 11 straight days. How'd that treat your body?
Yeah, the Bet Bash and the sign-up weekend were weekend one after another. I didn't want to deal with the flights and going home for like 3 days. And said, you know, I'll just stay in between. It went poorly. Like, it was hard on my body.
I bet.
Although everybody did go home, you know, on like Sunday after Bet Bash. So I had like 3 or 4 days of nobody's asking me to play craps at 4 a.m.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I can just chill a little by the pool, get some work done. So it was still hard. I'm not that young anymore.
Well, you also don't know what your wife's going to do while you're gone. She rescues dogs, yes, and adopts goats?
Yeah, she adopted goats last time. We got another dog now. It's what? Dr. Doolittle there. There's so many animals in my house now. But yeah, I'll be home tomorrow, see how the training's going, I guess.
It's her responsibility,
wow,
though.
Well, yeah. She knew this was on the calendar. We got one of them fancy touchscreen calendars on the wall. It says Vegas. You know, yeah. If you're going to adopt a dog, you don't want to do it this week, I guess.
What happens the next time she leaves and you adopt something?
Well, she is leaving. She's got a vacation here in a couple of weeks. She's going with her sister somewhere. I guess I'm in charge of the funny farm until then. Yeah.
Was it a German Shepherd?
Go get a pony.
Yeah, another little German Shepherd.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow.
No. Go get a pony.
Yeah, geez, that's all I needed. It just burns hay.
All right, so both you guys are from the same neck of the woods. You're from Rochester. Paulie, well, you live there. Paulie's from the St. Cloud area. We talked about this with Will Hill here at VSiN the other day. He's a lifelong Vikings fan. Let's start there. Because tough team to get a read on. I think it's going to be Kyler Murray, probably a quarterback. I like KOC. I was high on this team last year, wrong there. What do you anticipate this season for the Vikings?
And Drew and I planted our flag on the deep dive like 2 weeks ago before I think we even had camp in Minneapolis. Said, we're just going to do this podcast about the Minnesota Vikings under the assumption that Kyler Murray's the quarterback. It wasn't ever I watched JJ play, and there was some, you know, there's some glimpses and hope at the end of the year, but they really dumbed down the offense, and you know, they were in a spot where they were going to finish in the middle of the pack anyway. It didn't really matter what happened. They wanted to get him better reps, but he's just not quite ready, and I don't know that he's ever going to be at that level where he's going to be ahead of a, you know, you got to remember, Kyler first overall pick not that long ago. I think it was 2022 or 2024. It was like an even numbered year. Maybe that's a good harbinger for this, because that was like his high end. He's had some highs, and I think he's had some bad coaches down there, and we all love. Okay. I think we all love KOC, and that's my biggest thing. Yeah. When I'm looking for teams with a high ceiling, put a good coach together with a quarterback who's not absolutely going to poop the bed. You know, just give me somebody who can go out there and perform the job, and then give me a high end OC.
Got to get off to a hot start. Yeah. And how about two division games out of the gate? He's down on the Packers. So you go back, they're 8-3, Super Bowl talk. They had the big lead at Denver, and then they fell apart defensively, and then the injuries and the collapse down the stretch and what happened in the playoff loss to the Bears. What do you think of the rest of the division and also the Packers?
Yeah, the Packers are a funny one too, because I'm a little down on them, even though I've said, hey, why aren't they getting any hype? This is still a decent team. Nobody seems to be hyping them up, but my major knock is they're pretty thin. They really don't have any depth. They don't have any margin for error with injuries, but the Vikings play them week one, so I don't know that that's going to be something that's going to come into play. The Lions are your favorites there. They should be, but at the same time, we're working with another new offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the same conversation. It's like Goff is not some MVP-level quarterback until he has an OC like Ben Johnson who can put him there, and I don't know that we have that again this year with another new one. And then the Bears, the Bears are a problem. They're a conundrum. I don't know. Like, that's the same thing. Is how high can Caleb Williams take you? Because we saw, we saw Ben Johnson come in, and that team was markedly better. They fixed some things. They fixed some things in the defense. That offensive line took a step maybe sideways or back. What was it, 69 sacks, I think, 2 years ago for Caleb Williams?
Yeah.
Can't have that again. We can't have him running around and, making a bad second down throwaway into a 15-yard sack. But if he takes another step forward, it's going to be a dogfight. Jeez.
No question. Yes. But here's the thing, too, and they are a conundrum for me because of – look, I love the Johnson-Williams combination, what that might be, but you're talking about the number one team for regression, and Ben Johnson admitted that. Earlier, because of all of the turnover differential last year, plus 22, and they won all those games late.
The record.
Yeah.
Trailing last 2 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, you nailed that, too. The turnover regression, they were, plus 22?
Yeah.
You don't just do that over every single year. Like, most likely, they're near the middle of the pack. They're not getting all these extra possessions. So they gotta make it up by Caleb Williams being more efficient. And he was bad at times on the medium to intermediate, even some of the short passes. Everybody remembers, he's off his back foot on fourth down and crazy touchdown, and nobody can make that throw in that tight window. But then he's throwing a 6 yard out and it goes into the first row of the fans. And we need to find a little bit of a happy medium here, and you need to make those easy throws now.
Let's follow the money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Our guest, Danny Molitor, part of the Deep Dive podcast. You and Drew have been at the forefront of podcast content for several years now, doing it elite. I would say the combination there is between you two gentlemen. So you're at this point of the year. Now, we're still in early August, but what is your strongest stance, either in a positive way or a negative way, for any team in the league?
I'm higher than a lot of people on the Broncos. It's not like they're some dark horse team that nobody's going to see coming. It was a playoff team. It was a good team. But at the same time, I'm such a... What's the one thing that could take you deep in the playoffs? It's a great quarterback. The second best thing would be an elite head coach. And you see that all the time. If you have an elite head coach with experience, they can put together the game plan. And then on top of it, if the defense doesn't regress too far and it's still a top five defense, Bo Nix doesn't need to be good. Bo Nix can be your Sam Darnold. We're like, hey, this guy, we didn't think we'd get stuff out of him like this. And he's looking like a top 10 quarterback because of the system, because of the play calling, because of the game planning. And yeah, they absolutely could go deep in the playoffs. So I have some Broncos AFC, some Broncos division. That's especially because you have the Chiefs and the Chargers, which teams people are going to love for various reasons. And you got some pretty decent prices on the Broncos being in a tough division.
Are you down on anybody? Teams that are getting too much hype?
Oh, man. I mean, we are down on a few of the bad teams lower than the market. It's crazy. Although we were on some of the bad teams, but even the Ravens was another one. I think I was a touch low on there just because you have the super high end of what if Lamar plays to the level he is, but it was another, hey, the coaching change thing. Sure. And we don't really know much about this guy. I'm trying to put together a coaching aggression rating as far as how often do these guys go for it? Uh-huh. Are they doing the right thing? are they a good play caller? Are they a good play sequencer? And you just, you don't have anything on Minter. You don't have a lot on that, a lot of the people that are coming in there. So when you kind of wholesale a coaching staff like that, it tends to go one or two ways. And, you know, the high end's high because of Lamar and Zay, and you get some good players. But if that defense continues to regress after you lost McDonald to Seattle, it's a team that could, yeah, they could finish third in the division.
Maybe, yeah.
So you're Arizona, Miami, just atrocious then?
Yeah, I mean, the Jets and Miami were tough to talk about. The Jets have a little more upside with the roster, but Miami's roster is so rough. Like, we were playing a game at the bar the other day where somebody was, hey, name starting receivers for Miami, or any receivers for Miami. And, you know, we were a few deep. And it was like, I think we got two of them. And it took, like, four people to do it. And I just did a podcast about them. I'm like, oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, the roster is atrocious. Yeah. I mean, the same thing. It's fun. We got to see Arizona look really good with a couple different quarterbacks. Yeah. But at the same time, when you go up against real defenses in a real game, that roster's that's not hanging well. And and if we do go to Mendoza, I start pretty low if you're a rookie. Like, right now, my Raiders number is based on Kirk Cousins as a quarterback because I make my ratings for week one. It sounds like that's the plan. But once Mendoza goes in, it's going to take a little bit of a nosedive there, and they're going to be right down there as well because it's not – it's got a lot of holes. That's a fun rebuild because they got some fun players out here in Vegas. Yeah, and that one's with holes, too.
Yeah, you brought up Baltimore. So they're former coach now with the Giants, John Harbaugh. There's so much hype on this team. Very difficult schedule. I think it's 1 year too early with this team.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. And Harbaugh is one of those where, what was it, 18 years? And we do the thing where, hey, you didn't go out there and win four games and absolutely screw up a season, and that's why you're gone. I think it was, we need a new voice in the room. We need a change of pace here. It's just, let's try something new. Like they did with Pete Carroll in Seattle a couple years ago. And we made that analogy. It's like, man, what if we get the Pete Carroll thing where maybe you should have probably just rode off into the sunset.
Oh, interesting.
Taking a year off where, you know, has some of the game passed you by a little? Do you still have the same drive to do it? And, you know, there's a chance that we're midway through the season, we're like, and is Harbaugh going to be one and done after all this hype? Because it's a big name, but the last few years, I don't know if he was the main reason for the success after you saw some pretty decent coordinators come out of there and go have success elsewhere.
Yeah, great spot, Andy. Thanks so much for doing this,
Thank you.
You can follow Andy on X. He's at AndyMSFW, does a great job with Drew Dinsick on the Deep Dive podcast as well. Enjoy tonight in Vegas. Going back tomorrow?
Yeah.
Very good. We'll talk to Wes Reynolds up next here from VSiN. It feels like a very good week for his Hoosiers on the field this upcoming year. That's next on VSiN.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Welcome back. Live in Vegas from the Circa Resort Casino. Busy week here. And more football futures here. We go out to the Progressive Guest Line. Wes Reynolds joins the program now from the network. He is on X at WesReynolds1. Hey, Wes, thanks for the time today. How are you?
Hey, good to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So I'm going to begin with this. This week alone, a couple of reports with your Hoosiers, Wes. As edge rusher Kellen Wyatt has been added to the roster for the 2026 season. And he recorded 8 tackles for losses last year. He started 7 games before the season-ending injury. And that's to go along with Stephen Daly, who led the team with 19 tackles for losses last year, who is going to return for his 5th year. Like, this is it? This is confirmed? Both guys are going to come back and play this year?
Yeah, they are. I don't know in terms of – they're not in full pads yet. Now, they are practicing. Like, they're in drills, but – they're not really working in full pads as of yet. So we'll see when the time frame is for them to return. But they are going to both be back. And I remember Daly, of course, he got injured after the national championship game in Indianapolis, where he leapt up to high-five a fan and just came down wrong on that leg. And unfortunately, wasn't with him for the playoff run. Kellen Wyatt got hurt in the Oregon game. So now you're adding them to the guys that you've added in from the portal, Joshua Burnham, from Notre Dame, a couple pair of guys from Kansas State who were both productive, and your two tackles are back in terms of Mario Landino, Tyreek Tucker. So I never thought I'd say where the strength of Indiana's team is in the trenches. It's on both sides of the ball. Offensive line, yeah, which might be the best in the country, returning all of your starters, plus adding Joe Brunner, the transfer from Wisconsin, and your defensive line. And that's always been kind of what held Indiana back. It's like, well, they just can't compete with the big guys of the conference on the lines. Well, they certainly can. And getting those guys back, I just think, is a nice feather in the cap. Maybe that's why Kurt Cignetti was very sure of himself at Big Ten Media Day a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, they get the Buckeyes at home at Michigan. They get USC at home. They're at Washington as well. I bet them plus 310 to win the big. It feels to me like people are still sleeping on this team, which I have no idea why. And then couple that with the new AD at Purdue with the comments this week. the most baffling thing I've ever heard in my life, Wes.
You know, and the thing is, Tommy McClellan, who is the new Purdue AD, and he's been doing the media rounds, doing damage control today, he actually comes with a pretty good reputation as a fundraiser. He was at Vanderbilt. He was previously at Rice, was at Louisiana Tech before that, and has raised money for football facilities and for the program. And that's really what's holding Purdue right back. They got caught with their pants down with this NIL thing, and they were way behind the eight ball. And you're seeing that's why they've dipped to the bottom of the conference, because Purdue can have success as a football program. They've honestly, as much as I hate to admit it, they've had more success, at least lifetime-wise, than Indiana certainly has. But Indiana's got the trophy. And one thing for Purdue, because that came out about Indiana last year, we're the number one alumni base in the nation, for most largest alumni base in the nation. Well, Purdue is number seven, by the way. So there's no excuse for Purdue. It's not like Purdue does not have wealthy alums and successful alums coming out of West Lafayette there. There's no excuse for those guys, I think, to be the bottom of the barrel in this conference. But the whole key is they got to get more money in that program. I don't know if Mr. McClellan inspired donors yesterday, because he basically just said, yeah, we're little brother, essentially, which Purdue, I think, kind of treats themselves as with Indiana, and saying, if you don't want to win championships, go to Indiana. Well, Indiana's got 25 and Purdue's got three. So and it was 122-3, by the way, the last 2 years, Indiana versus Purdue on the gridiron. So I don't mind you throwing shot across the bow. I think rivalries are great. I love the trash talk, but You gotta, I think, be a little bit more self-aware in your introduction. So he lost the press conference. He talked about winning the press conference often. He lost it. But if you're successful, that gets forgotten about. If you're not, you'll get reminded of that every single day.
The schedule's brutal. But I this is maybe contrarian what you're doing with the Buckeyes. Brad Powers was on and pointed out the last time the Buckeyes lost three games or more was 2011. So the win total of 9.5, do you still think there's enough talent that even though with a brutal schedule, they're going to get to 10 wins?
I do. And look, I still have a lot of questions about this team. Last year, they got answered on defense, though, with Matt Patricia. People were like, oh, that's kind of a curious hire. Well, he got an A-plus as a hire, being the number one defense in the country via a lot of different metrics and stats. Well, now they're going to try to do that offensively with Arthur Smith coming in as the offensive coordinator. I think what you saw out of Ohio State last year, and keep in mind, they do lose, I believe, 8 starters to the NFL draft. I think they had, what, 3 of the top 11 in the NFL draft off that side. So they got to replace a lot of those guys. So that's a concern. But my biggest concern probably for Ohio State is the offensive line. Because I think what you saw with these guys in the two biggest games of the season, that was in the Big Ten Championship against Indiana, and then, of course, against Miami in the Cotton Bowl, they got beat up front and they got whipped up front. I was sitting there in Indianapolis at Lucas Oil Stadium like, man, they can't run the ball at all against us. Like they cannot run it. They are not getting any push off the line, but the talent is obviously there offensively with Sayin and with Smith. And I want to see if Arthur Smith kind of increases the tempo with this offense, because if you watched Ohio State last year, if you just look at box scores, you're like, oh wow, they were so explosive and they're scoring, you know, 45 and 50 points routinely. They didn't do it with the hurry-up offense. They did it with the slowest pace in all of FBS. They were the slowest-paced offense, and that really bit them in the backside against Miami when they got behind, because they couldn't all of a sudden turn up the pace on offense and score on these guys in Miami's front four. They were getting home against that Ohio State offensive line. But it's tough for me to not see them winning 10, even though they got 51 newcomers on the roster. They got to go to Texas, Iowa, Indiana, USC, and Nebraska. But I think that there's going to be some changes. I'm going to trust Ryan Day here that he's going to press the right buttons with that offense. He certainly did it with the defense last year. So I think 10-2 is certainly doable for the Buckeyes.
All right. They're calling Whittingham the stain remover. How about Michigan?
Every time you bring it up.
I love it. It's hilarious.
What type of stains are we talking about here?
Oh,
Paul.
Easy. Hello.
We'll leave that one alone.
About 8.5 under your case against Michigan.
Yeah, and I like Kyle Whittingham. He's one of my favorite coaches. And, you know, if you've bet him like we have with Utah for many years, you've cashed a lot of tickets because Utah was a program that nobody out-toughed. Nobody out-toughed those guys. You might out-talent them, but you didn't out-tough them. And he's trying to restore that with Michigan, I think, here, and kind of get him back to discipline, toughness, physicality. And I think he's a fit, even though he comes from outside the family and he's kind of an unconventional hire, being that he's in his mid-60s. So usually you would want a younger coach. But I just think that this is going to be a different ball game with Michigan. Now you're going in and you're getting better athletes, but you're playing against better athletes. And you're going to get tested immediately with the schedule, with Oklahoma, with Iowa, with Penn State, Indiana. You got to go to Oregon. You got to go to Ohio State. So you don't avoid any of the top three. That just sounds so funny to say, with Indiana being included there. We'll see how Bryce Underwood develops with this offense. They are bringing in Jason Beck, by the way, who took New Mexico, I think, from 44th to 4th a couple of years ago, and then did the same at Utah with Devin Dampier. They went from 115th to 4th. So we'll see if that offense is dynamic. I still think they lack a little bit of talent, their usual talent at receiver. Defensively, I still think they'll be solid. Jay Hill comes in, the former Weber State head coach, and was there at BYU the last 3 years. They got some talent up front, so they'll be physical, but I just don't know if they have the depth of talent yet. And plus, they are running a new scheme, I think, this year on defense with that 4-2-5. They're going to blitz a little bit more, play both man and zone coverage. So Michigan, to me, like them, USC, Penn State are kind of that second tier, right? I would have them third of those three teams in the second tier. I think that they're probably looking solid 8-4 season, but I think it's going to take a couple of years to really get them back to where they should be.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
With you. You mentioned the Penn State. We'll have to talk to you on the other side of the break here. It's very popular with the win total over, but stepping out and saying to make the playoff, that's aggressive. So we'll get to that coming up on the other side, but the plus 450 to make the playoff, it is, I'm not a Campbell guy, but Mitch, the schedule's a joke.
It's terrible. Yeah.
I mean,
really
they avoid
easy.
The top three teams.
Sure.
And if they can't get to 9 wins, I'd be shocked.
Yeah,
and it's over 8.5 over minus 160.
By the way, Wes, Matt Eumanns, some of the betting tips that have been recorded here at the network are playing through like commercial breaks. And Eumanns, one of his tips is stick to your strengths overall. And he talks about betting college basketball. That's his favorite sport. But he sticks to only a couple of conferences. He said, I can't handicap three. So far, we've talked all Big Ten. You do that as well in college football, where you concentrate on, you know, obviously, like maybe the Power Five, but you don't maybe pay attention. How do you do that overall?
A little bit. I mean, I probably might have less ACC than I would maybe in basketball because I follow that closer. But Big Ten, MAC, I think SEC, Notre Dame, certainly a lot of the big programs. So I think a lot of it is just, you know, sticking to your strengths, but also getting a network, and that's been probably talked about downtown where you guys are all week, getting a network of people that know different things and following them and working with them and collaborating with them on these.
We'll continue with Wes Reynolds coming up next. He's on the Progressive Guest Line. I can't wait to hear the rundown on just how high you might be on the Penn State Nittany lines. That's coming up next here on the Sports Betting Network. Yeah, man, heavy football this hour. We continue with Wes Reynolds as he is on the Progressive Guest Line. A lot of bets out of the Big Ten in the previous segment. We'll continue here now, and the college football guide is out right now. It's unbelievable, 300-plus pages. Wes, a big writer for a lot of that stuff as well, contributor to that guide again this year. So tell us now, break this down. Paulie mentioned this in the previous segment, how easy it is overall for Penn State this year, and then the positive bets that you want to have on them as a result.
Yeah, you mentioned the schedule there. The fact that you avoid Ohio State, Indiana, and Oregon altogether. Now, you do got to go to Michigan, and you do got to go to Washington, but you are favored in every single home game. And everybody asks, who is this year's Indiana, just like they did last year? Well, it turned out to be Indiana again. So who is it going to be this year? You know, maybe it is going to be Penn State because there is at least a little bit of similarity. That doesn't mean everybody can do it. You know, what Cignetti did, getting the guys and the staff from James Madison. But Matt Campbell's certainly going to try it here. And he brought, I believe, 24 guys from Ohio State and the majority of his staff, including of his offensive coordinator, to State College. 40 total transfers, by the way, for Penn State. Cignetti, by comparison, he had 29 and 12. From James Madison, and like 22 of them were from the group of five or lower. Well, meanwhile, 36 of the 40 for Campbell are from the Power Four. And I realize this is a step up in class into the Big Ten, even from the Big 12. But keep in mind with this Iowa State program, they went 11-2 2 years ago and were in the Big 12 championship game and beat Miami, including Cam Ward in that shootout. What was it? The Pop-Tarts Bowl, whatever the bowl was in Orlando. It was like 42-41. So this is a team that's very capable, but the whole thing is going to be, can Rocco Beck stay healthy? Because this guy is really tough. He started 39 straight games for the Cyclones, but last year he had a couple concussions. He had a torn labrum, multitude of injuries, but and had to play through them. So that's why in spring he was kind of limited to 7-on-7. But he brings a lot of his weapons with him. Carson Hansen, who's his main running back, his tight ends, his receivers. Plus you get an Ohio State transfer in the backfield, James Peoples. So I think offensively there's going to be continuity there. Defensively is where there's going to be a little bit of adjustment because D'Anton Lynn, by the way, goes back to his alma mater. He was at USC the last 2 years as the defensive coordinator. Well, now they're going with that 4-2-5, a different alignment, but he's got seven starters who started at Iowa State last year who only allowed about 20 a game. I think that was good for top 25 in the country. And also the fact that I think that these guys are going to be able to hold to the physicality of the Big Ten, because those were the questions, right, about Oregon and USC and all the Pac-12 expatriates. Well, all Oregon did was win the whole thing. I don't know if Penn State is going to quite get to that, but I think that they can meet the physicality because at least they're used to it playing Iowa every single year in the Cy-Hawk game. And Campbell beat Ferentz three of the last 4 years, so they were able to win those grinder 16-13, 13-10 type of games. So I think Penn State is going to surprise here. I know Matt Campbell wasn't the first choice for Pat Kraft and the Nittany Lions, but may end up being the best choice. We shall see. Time will tell. But I think that they're kind of getting slept on, whereas last year I think all of us really liked these guys, and then they just fell apart after that overtime loss against Oregon. So I think Penn State, I mentioned that second tier where we talked about Ohio State, Oregon, Indiana, top tier, and then Penn State, USC, Michigan, the second tier. I think you're getting four teams out of the Big Ten, and I think Penn State has a really good chance with this schedule to be that fourth team.
Well, that's an easy schedule. The opposite is what Northwestern's dealing with. And I love the new stadium, but they have to go to Oregon, they have to go to Ohio State, and they have to go to Indiana. Win total is 5.5. What do you think of Northwestern?
Yeah, it's going to be an $862 million stadium at Ryan Field when they host Penn State, and they open that up on Friday, October 2nd. And, you know, now that Pat Fitzgerald has taken the job at Michigan State, the lawsuit is closed, so this is David Brown's program here. But I think the schedule is daunting, and then plus you're getting a quarterback who obviously has something to prove, but his first go-around in the Big Ten last year at Michigan State, I'm speaking of Aiden Childs, of course, didn't go very well because he lost the job up there and ends up transferring down to Evanston. He is going to get to work with a new OC. It's Chip Kelly, and also Jerry Neuheisel is going to be the quarterback coach, who's the interim at UCLA, recruited Childs out of high school. So you would think on the surface that this offense is going to be better for him than I think that he had at Michigan State. And they've got a pretty solid rushing attack with Coma Lafayette, Joseph Hinton, and also Gavin Sawchuk transferring into Florida State. But I don't know how deep they are at receiver, and I don't know if they can get after the passer. They only had 23 sacks, and that was 14th in the Big Ten, and you're losing your top two defensive ends. So, you know, I think it's going to be tough for those guys. And I just think that schedule is such a bear, having to play all the top three on the road. Plus, you get Penn State at home, and you also go to Michigan State. And I know we were talking over the break, Paul, about, you know, Pat Fitzgerald saying they're going to be bad. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're probably going to be bad, but I bet you Pat Fitzgerald is chomping at the bit to get it at his alma mater and his former employer. So that's going to be a tough game and certainly one to watch, even though those teams will be well down in the standings.
Well, I don't know how Locksley keeps surviving this. Back-to-back 4-8 seasons as he enters his eighth year at Maryland. They're excited for Washington at quarterback. What do you think of Maryland's win total, 4.5?
Yeah, he's a survivor because he can recruit. He can recruit with the best of them. And he's kept a lot of kids home, including Malik Washington, the quarterback. The offense should be a little bit better because you're getting, I think, an upgraded offensive coordinator. They had Pep Hamilton. And look, Pep Hamilton was good when he had Stanford and Andrew Luck. Yeah. And a bunch of pros on the offensive line. And, you know, didn't work out at Maryland. So it is Clint Trickett who comes in, former West Virginia, former Florida State quarterback, now coming in from Jacksonville State as the OC. They're going to use Washington, I think, a little bit more motion, a little bit more RPO, use him as a runner. I thought he had a pretty good freshman season. I know the record wasn't pretty, but I thought he was pretty solid and could really throw the football everywhere. But the receivers just got to catch him. Like, they dropped it way too much. And I think they're going to run him a little bit more because the running game has not been good. I think, you know, the traditional running game the last few years for Maryland. Defensively, they got a lot of talent on that D-line, and the DC is Ted Monachino, who was with the Baltimore Ravens that won the Super Bowl when he coached T-Sizzle, Terrell Suggs, and Elvis Dumervil. So he knows good edge rushers, and he's got a lot of them there. So they got some talent coming back on defense. This is Locksley being on the hot seat this year. But they don't get Oregon, they don't get Indiana, they don't get Michigan. They do got to go to Ohio State and USC, so those are probably losses. If they can go 3-0 in the non-conference, and they'll get James Franklin and Virginia Tech, and that's a big rivalry because they recruit a lot of the same kids there at the DMV, you got winnable conference games. UCLA is winnable, Rutgers is winnable, Wisconsin is winnable, at Purdue is winnable. So I thought 4.5 was a little bit low. I think probably 6-6 is the ceiling for this team. And then SVP and Kevin Plank are going to be asked to add something to the collection plate to keep Malik Washington as everybody pursues him in the portal in the offseason.
Yeah, no, that's a lock pretty much. So you are also the co-host of Long Shots, great podcast here at the network. You, Matt Brown, Kelly Bidlin, every week on the PGA Tour. Are you looking at anything live here at the Wyndham?
I'm hoping that Ben James, who, by the way, is the third choice, because it's been a lean season, I'll admit it, in the outrights this year, but he is currently 11 under par. They just suspended play. I think they got a thunderstorm going on there now in Greensboro, but tied for the lead with Jordan Smith. Bo Hosler, by the way, won back. He was the first round leader yesterday. Also have Tom Kim in the mix that we all bet. Actually, it was a pod play. All three of us landed on Tom Kim, and he is the fourth choice right now. So if I were maybe adding anything live, Davis Thompson also still in the mix. It was a pre-tournament play for me. I would maybe look, because I want these guys that can win. You know, Sahith Theegala is 20-1, and he's only a couple back. You know, you're seeing some names that don't win a lot, like the Doug Gims and the Bo Hoslers and the Rico Hoeys. You know, I got to believe it when I see it. But I went with Ben James for one of my plays because we've seen the PGA Tour, you guys are winning right now. Jackson Koivin 2 weeks ago in Detroit, or excuse me, in Minneapolis. And then Michael Chorbornson, PGA Tour, you guy out of Stanford, won last week in Detroit. Maybe Ben James, who's out of the University of Virginia, by the way, one of the only five guys in history to be a four-time first-team All-American in college golf. Wow. Is Ben James. So he has a ton of pedigree, was the number two ranked amateur behind Koivin. So hopefully he can keep it going. He's in the house at 11 under.
Great stuff, Wes. Thank you. And we'll be in touch soon. Have a great weekend.
You bet, guys. Thanks for having me.
Follow him on X at Wes Reynolds One. They just showed Ben James on TV. They were interviewing him. Spitting image for Carm from the Bear.
Yeah.
That was my cursory look. First glance. I'm like, is that him? Jeremy Allen White, isn't that his name?
Did you watch the last season?
I tapped out.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't do it.
Yeah. I'm not there either.
I do that with almost every show nowadays. At some point, it just hits. I'm like, there's too much. I'm not doing it. I'm sorry.
Can't come back?
No. Nope.
Started Lasso?
No.
Okay.
I'm a little afraid.
Are you? All right. Yeah. Circa Survivor documentary heating up. This week's episode's called Survivor Mode. Week 10 arrives like a wrecking ball. Massive wave of eliminations tears through the field. and all hell breaks loose on Thanksgiving. Almost $19 million on the line. Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern on VSiN. Catch up. All the episodes are on YouTube. Search VSiN Live.
Fun card tonight, WNBA. Best bets analysis. Doug Kazarian on the program next.